Good evening, everyone. Welcome to August's Science Fact Update. At least I will call it that lame title for now until somebody suggests something a bit cooler. I'm sure you guys are probably better at naming things than me. I figured since this was a monthly column that it should have some sort of a name. So what is our topic tonight? Well, the overall topic is aging. Why do we get old, and is there any way to stop it? I have several stories that actually address those questions. These stories range from the almost silly to the very serious. Let me start off with the silly ones first. All right, at least partly silly. Some of you may know the comedian Lewis Black, who comments regularly on The Daily Show. Black has the wondrous ability to go on long, fuming rants about all sorts of political and social points and make them quite funny. In one of his commentaries, he once made a point that scientists cannot be trusted from day to day to be helpful about what is good for you and what is not. He was actually raving about hydration and the need for water and how researchers cannot seem to agree whether lots of water hurts you or helps you. Well, I've got two stories related to that kind of point. At one time, doctors insisted that wine and coffee, even in moderation, were bad for you. And if not bad for you, then certainly not helpful. Well, recent research suggests that that is not the case. Let's start with the more recent story about coffee. It appears that 2 to 3 cups of coffee may actually lower your statistical likelihood of death. Over 120,000 people were studied by Dr. Lopez Garcia and collaborators from Harvard and the University of Madrid. Their work was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine recently. The study followed 2 large cohorts of men and women who provided data on coffee consumption and health outcomes, and they looked at them every 2 to 4 years over a 20-year period. By the way, in my opinion, committing your lab to a 20-year health study is a bit like gambling in Las Vegas. All that you can hope for is that it turns out well, but the odds are pretty much always against you. At any rate, high coffee consumption was not related to increased mortality and seemed to be associated with lower total and cardiovascular mortality. That means fewer and less fatal heart attacks. Probably the most interesting conclusion of the study was that coffee drinkers, who tended to smoke more, drink more alcohol, not take vitamins, or exercise less than average, had about the same death rate as those who didn't drink coffee at all. So good news for those of you who abuse your bodies. Drink coffee and save yourselves. So what about all the earlier studies that linked coffee consumption to nastiness like pancreatic cancer or elevated risk for heart disease? Well, according to Lopez Garcia, those studies did not account for the fact that coffee drinkers in general tend to have less healthy lifestyles. In other words, it was not the coffee making those people sicker. It was the fact that they were smoky, lazy, beer-swilling slobs. Okay, one last thing. You need to drink coffee to get this effect. It doesn't matter whether it's caffeinated or decaffeinated, but if you drink Starbucks lattes or other cutesy drinks with lots of sugar and lots of cream and lots of fat, you will just offset any physical benefit that you get and be back to square one. Also, they found that drip-filtered coffee seemed to be the best. Turkish and French press coffees are boiled and have high levels of a chemical called cafestol, which increases blood cholesterol and kind of brings you back to square one again. My second food-related story is about wine, indirectly about wine at least. We have known for a number of years now that red wine or even grape juice have a chemical that seems to reduce blood pressure and help the heart. This chemical is called resveratrol. Recent data from the University of Cincinnati and Spanish National Cancer Research Center in Madrid suggests that resveratrol has another ability. Mice who are dosed with it live longer because it seems to mimic a low-calorie restriction diet. You may or may not remember that little bit of longevity research was published several years back. It seems that if you reduce the amount of calories of a mouse to the point where they just get enough to live and survive, they will actually live 30% longer than mice on a normal diet. So what is the upshot here? Resveratrol may be a chemical that can force your cells to react as if they were on a low-calorie diet without being forced to eat nothing but sprouts day in, day out.
Imagine that, a chemical that fools your body into thinking that you are being healthy. One of the other results that they found is that obese mice on this chemical actually live as long as normal weight mice. Wahoo, right? Well, maybe. Maybe not quite so wahoo. The basis for this longevity is a family of antioxidative chemicals called sirtuins. Sirtuins seem to have the ability to reduce oxidative damage in liver and heart muscle cells. Well, all muscle cells. These chemicals are induced to be made by cells in the presence of resveratrol or low caloric intake. Those mice treated with resveratrol also had better bone health, fewer cataracts, and improved coordination as they aged, according to another study by Rafael de Cabo of the U.S. National Institute of Aging. So this sounds great, right? Is there a problem? Well, first, yeah, there are a couple of problems. First, although treated mice live longer, they're still prone to normal levels of cancer. Apparently, the sirtuins have little effect on lowering cancer levels. So it is possible that we may be onto something that will make us heart healthy or heart healthier up until our deaths, but not keep us from getting cancer. But hey, that's not so bad, right? Nobody ever said that red wine was a magic bullet. However, unfortunately, there's another slight problem. According to a report in the July issue of Cell Metabolism, increasing sirtuin levels in nervous system tissues, like the brain, make those tissues more sensitive to oxidative damage, not less. This could mean that you will live to an old age drinking your resveratrol-laced wine, and your mind will go all that much more quickly in your heart-healthy body. Yeah, not a good thing. One thing that this does tell you is that this stuff is not simple. You can see why the researchers are confused about whether anything is good or bad for you, and why the disclaimers rain down like snow in Iceland. So far, none of this bodes well for you Lazarus Long wannabes out there. So what can you do? Well, it depends. Statistically, your best bet for living a long time is being a female and being on a calorie-restricted diet. This according to Adamo Valle of the University of Balearic Islands in Spain. Valle and company studied male and female rats, and the female rats did live longer, healthier lives under the same conditions as the male rats. The calorie-restricted males mimicked the pattern seen in females on a normal diet. Yes, a guy cannot catch a break. Well, I guess it means that the male rats were living longer, just rarely as long as the female mice ever did. It's not quite Lazarus Long lifespan, but gentlemen, sometimes you take what you are given. I've got two last stories on aging and age extension. The first is about aging and evolution. Now, I know that is a dirty word to many people, but please do not burn me at the stake. I'm Catholic, and I believe in evolution. I know that sounds strange, but this is not only possible, it's even allowed by the church. And this is not the place for theological arguments, so let us sidestep those issues for the moment. In the past, I have discussed aging and evolution with colleagues, and the question is, why do humans survive into old age, long past the point of reproduction? What is the point of human longevity? Now think about it. From an evolutionary standpoint, reproduction is the be-all and end-all of all things. Once you have had your kids and made sure they are grown up to reproduce themselves, you can die. That is the norm in much of the animal world. By all rights, humans should be dead by about the age of 30. Yes, that assumes the next generation reproducing at about the age of 15, which is not something I am encouraging my daughter or son to do in the future. So why aren't we all dead by 30? Why do we survive at all into old age? Well, one of my colleagues suggested that it may be in humans that it is evolutionarily advantageous for the parental generation to survive to be the grandparental generation. That is, in human society, the grandparental generation helps ensure the survival of the newest generation of children. Oh, and off topic, recent data also suggests that the grandparents are kept younger and more vigorous with children around. That might be a nice suggestion on why humans have such great longevity, but it does not suggest at all why we age. The typical answer to that question has been that aging is a result of oxidative and physical wear and tear on the body. In other words, we just wear out from all the stress. And that has been the accepted answer, and there is no doubt that it is partially true. However, a more recent and radical suggestion is that all animal aging is a genetic and evolutionary accident. That during early evolution, millions of years ago, something went wrong in the developmental genetics of animals. And because of that genetic alteration in our ancient multicellular ancestors, all animals living today are cursed with the inheritance of aging. Although many Christians would freak at the ironic suggestion, again, because of the evolutionary stuff it implies, that actually tracks with the biblical curse against Adam and Eve that they would age and die as punishment for their sins. Interesting. At any rate, a Stanford University study in the soil worm C. elegans suggests that although environmental stresses and cell damage do play a role in longevity, it may be a lot more complicated than that. The report in the journal Cell identified three genes that appear to control the majority of changes in gene expression that accompany aging. The researchers exposed worms to a range of environmental stresses, including heat, DNA damage, and oxidative stress, and they found that the expression of the controller genes was largely unaffected while they were young. It was only as the worms aged that the balanced expression of those genes changed. Based on the results, the researchers suggested that aging is an accidental developmental program that alters the expression of those three major genes. To see if they could fix the problem, Stuart Kim, who was the lead investigator, and his collaborators tried rebalancing the regulatory network in middle-aged worms by making their gene expression pattern resemble that of younger organisms. And ta-da! The animals lived longer. If aging is simply a matter of unbalanced gene expression in humans, as it is in worms, then this may open up a whole new area of research. Pharmacologists, gerontologists, and chemists will have a whole slew of drug targets, proteins, and genes that may allow us to slow the aging process. So we may soon have anti-aging compounds that are a little more potent than red wine to imbibe. It's even possible that the rebalancing may work better in humans than it does in worms. Worms are born and die with their entire complement of cells. They have no stem cells. Our human stem cells give us the ability to replace broken, damaged, or aged cells. So this could actually be an advantage in aging and responding to such treatment. Okay, on to the last story of the night. Let's go back to Heinlein's Lazarus Long and his 1941 novel, Methuselah's Children. This is one of the first SF books I read as a kid, and I was fascinated by the idea that just due to the accident of genetics, some people could live longer than others. Although in the case of Heinlein's Howard family, it was planned eugenics, but you get the idea. Today, geneticists are interested in the same thing. Why are certain people at the far end of the bell curve in terms of age? And not only why do they live longer, but what chance genetics allows some of them to be healthy right into their 90s and beyond? The Genomic Medicine Program at Scripps Science Institute out in California has begun a genomic study of 100 major genes in 1,000 people age 80 or older who have never suffered any serious illnesses or taken any medication. They plan to sequence those 100 genes in all 1,000 people. The 100 genes are known from animal research and other studies to influence health and aging. Quote, "We are especially interested in major housekeeping, master control genes like those involved in DNA repair or insulin growth factor 1, unquote, says Eric Topol, who is the chief researcher on the project. Projects like this have actually been done before, but this one is unique because it will look at a very large population with more genes examined than ever before. And this will, of course, make the statistics actually credible for once that they find. The work will look at the existence of rare variations of expression in different genes that play a role in health and disease. The DNA sequencing will allow Topol and his colleagues to determine if healthy older people are more likely to carry variations that either make defensive protein factors function more efficiently or whether they hinder the activity of harmful factors that speed up aging. Again, this type of study will lead to the creation of new classes of drugs that could slow aging. If you identify the molecular basis for any type of age protective effect, then given time, you can eventually mimic that effect with drugs." Okay, so how do I close this rambling and disjointed entry? Do I want to live longer? Yes, probably. But truthfully, I'm not sure that I would be happy living longer unless my wife could as well, and my kids and my friends. Staying young while others turn old around you is an old theme in SF. Probably the first time I came across it was in the original Star Trek episode Requiem for Methuselah. Let me remind you of what that was about. The poor title character, Methuselah, is ancient, hundreds and hundreds of years old, and has gotten so sick of his loved ones dying and aging that he has built the perfect ageless female android to be his companion, which, of course, Kirk has to try to seduce and, of course, causes trouble. Anyway, I imagine that it must be horrible having all your family and friends taken from you as they age and you don't, or not quite so much. Equally awful would be surviving to old age without the benefits of health. I have a great aunt who survived to 95. She recently passed away, but she's been sickly for the last couple of years, spending much of her time in bed and barely ambulatory. I mean, I felt pretty bad for her and thought it almost a blessing when she finally passed. Now, there are a few things worse than being in continual pain with your mind functioning at only a degree of its normal competence. Perhaps being old and healthy and surrounded by those you love is asking too much, but yeah, if I get all that, then bring on old age. I'm ready for it. As the young drip Clyde from the Doctor Who spin-off, The Sarah Jane Adventures, put it,
"Way technology's moving. By the time I'm 40, I can get my brain put in a robot and live forever."
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Thanks for listening. As usual, take care, and I hope I have inspired some of you. Until next time, this is Jim Campanella.